Blog Talk Radio.
If it is Sunday, it is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you on Sunday, August 5th, 2018. And it's a pleasure to be with you as always, just like we are every Sunday night here on PWTorchLivecast.com. My guest tonight, I am proud to have on as a co-host after talking to him quite often here as a caller on Wrestling Night in America. I welcome in PWTorch.com contributor Frank Pediani. Frank, good to have you finally in the co-host seat here on Wrestling Night in America.
Greg, thank you so much. I appreciate the invitation to do this with you tonight. I'm looking forward to this, and we've got a lot to talk about as we get ready for a big weekend in just a couple of weeks.
That's right. You are referring, of course, to SummerSlam, which comes up August 19th, and we're going to talk quite a bit about that here in the next 90 minutes. In addition to Impact Wrestling and the G1. But first, Frank, a lot of people who listen to this show know you as a caller. I'd like them to know you as a PWTorch.com contributor. So give the folks listening a little taste of what you contribute to PWTorch.com.
My pleasure, Greg. So the Raw and SmackDown Primer articles drop on Monday and Tuesday, usually after 1 o'clock, depending on when I get them off to Wade. I usually finalize everything in the morning just to see if there's any updates, any changes, injuries, and whatnot. And I'll base it on what WWE.com is advertising on their website and kind of expound on things a little bit, kind of take a look in depth at the various angles, where things might be going, and how they relate to the upcoming event. Obviously, you know, around this time we're talking about SummerSlam, which, Craig, is really crazy if you think about it. I mean, it feels like it was yesterday that we had the Royal Rumble and WrestleMania. Here we are with SummerSlam, and in a couple of weeks, I know this is near and dear to you, but we got school, and we're going to look forward to putting two kids on the bus. So good for us, and for you, I know you've got a little bit of a new adventure this year in school, so I hope you're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I start Wednesday. The kids start the following Wednesday, so this is my last unencumbered edition of Wrestling Night in America. I'll be frazzled as I usually am during school next Sunday when I talk here again on Wrestling Night in America. So that's going to be an adventure. I'm looking forward to it. I'm ready and raring to go. For the longest time, my first 6 years, I've taught sixth grade reading and special ed, so I've been an inclusion teacher, so I've always co-taught. There's always been somebody else in the room with me teaching, and this year I'm teaching seventh grade civics government. I'm going to have my own classroom, and that's going to be, it's a completely different grade level, completely different subject. So it's I've been trying to cram here this summer with as much as I can, but it's exciting. I'm excited to get started. So it's gotten to that point of the summer where I've just got so much running through my head. It's just a matter of now I want it to start so I can actually accomplish something, so I can actually feel like I'm putting it to all that stuff that I've learned to use and then putting it into practice. But that'll come in due time. So I guess I shouldn't rush my summer away. But, you know, Frank, as he mentioned, PWTorch.com is where you can find his Raw and SmackDown primers. It's also where you can find my Texas takes, which I've gotten to writing a bit more frequently over the last month or so. In fact, one article dropped today. They're short, snack-sized articles, I guess, compared to the full-page columns you can find every week in the Torch newsletter from me on page 10. Today I wrote about the Mae Young Classic that's coming up. The full field of 32 has been announced. So I've looked at the names and some of the star power and given you a couple names to keep an eye on as that tournament begins taping this week at Full Sail University. Before we get into SummerSlam, before we get into Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Frank, I do want to talk about the G1, New Japan Summer Tournament here, and I want to give fans a little taste of where we stand here with two B block shows left, one A block show, and then the finale, which is Sunday, August 12th. Right now in the A block, Tanahashi leads with 14 points. Jay White and Okada both have 12 points. Minoru Suzuki and Evo each with 8. Then it's a three-way tie with 6 points. Michael Elgin, Bad Luck Fale, and Adam Page with 6. And Makabe and Yoshihashi with 4. Over on the B block, Kenny Omega leads things with 12, despite his recent loss to Tomohiro Ishii. Ibushi and Naito have 10. Sabre and Sonata have 8. Goto and Ishii with 6. Juice Robinson and Tama Tonga with 4. And Toru Yano with 2. So, Frank, I know you are just sort of diving into New Japan and watching some of the shows on Access TV. I believe you said you've watched the San Francisco G1 special. As someone who is, and correct me if I'm wrong, a bit of a novice when it comes to New Japan, what's been your impression so far of what you've seen of New Japan?
Well, it's funny you ask that, Greg. I take the three promotions, WWE, Impact, and New Japan, and on one side of the spectrum, you've got WWE, which focuses way on the entertainment, putting smiles on your faces and whatnot. And then you go to the kind of the middle where you have Impact, where it is about the entertainment, but it's more raw. It's more, you know, kind of the stuff from the 90s, a little bit of the ECW touches and stuff like that, and not really family-friendly, you know, not as much as WWE is. And then you go to the complete other side of the spectrum with New Japan, and I like that it's treated more like a sport, you know. You're not watching these shows looking for selfie promos and people singing songs and guitars and all of that stuff. It's a little more serious, and something like the G1 special actually means something. Correct me if I'm wrong, the G1, the winner of the tournament, gets a shot at Wrestle Kingdom for the championship. Is that the ultimate purpose of the G1? Do I have that right, Greg?
Historically, that's been the case. Obviously, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion Kenny Omega is in the tournament this year. So if he were to win, it wouldn't be him getting a shot because he's already the champion.
Sure.
But, yeah, historically that's been the case. I don't know if it's stated for a fact and a guarantee that that's the case because someone like Omega is in the tournament, but that's generally accepted policy, I guess.
Okay. Because I don't know who was talking about it, but there was a thought that Naito was actually the favorite, and I think you mentioned that he was in the B block a little bit behind Omega. Does it look like he has the opportunity to catch up? Because just kind of watching the product right now, that's kind of the guy that I felt like was on the rise. And then in the A block, I kind of felt like Hangman Page was a bit on the rise. Those are the two characters that have actually caught my eye, to be quite honest with you.
Well, let's look at those two right now. Adam Page with 6 points is far behind Tanahashi's 14 points in the A block, so he won't have a chance to jump Tanahashi this year. At the B block, though, it's interesting. There's two more nights left of the B block. Naito is 2 points behind Omega, so it would take 2 Naito wins and Omega to lose twice to allow Naito to jump him. Of course, it would be a tie if Naito wins twice and Omega wins once. Let's look at the schedule. On Wednesday, Omega faces Toru Yano, who it's hard to imagine Yano beating Omega. And then Naito faces Sonata in the main event. So that will be a tough match for Naito. It'll be a good match. It's one that I could totally see him winning. And then on the final night, we have Omega versus Kota Ibushi and Naito versus Zack Sabre. So I could see Omega losing to Ibushi there, especially given their relationship as part of the Golden Lovers tag team. I could see Naito winning both of his matches over Zack Sabre and Sonata, though it's also totally possible that he loses one of those. So I think that the trouble is going to come with Omega and Yano on Wednesday, If Omega wins that, that gets 14 points. If Naito wins out, he's at 14 points. So there would be a tie at the top of the B block with Naito and Omega. I don't know if the tiebreaker is a is the head-to-head during the tournament. That would make sense. But that's kind of where we stand there. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that, that Naito ends up in the finals for the B block. It's going to be tough sledding, though.
Yeah, it's. I'll tell you what, with New Japan, Greg, it's really interesting how these two shows were very well received. At least I felt they were well received. I enjoyed them both. I enjoyed the G1 in San Francisco, and also the, I think it was Strong Style Evolved, which took place sometime around WrestleMania. In fact, I think I was a caller that night with you, because I remember watching it. I don't know who you had on. And I was tweeting with Zach Haydorn throughout the show and Radigan just to kind of get a feel for who was who. And so I really hope they get a strong footing or a stronger footing in the U.S. Down the line, because it's a really nice product to watch. Again, it's different because they tell things from more of a sport point of view. But it could be something that could really be enjoyable down the line.
Yeah, and for those of you who understandably can't be up at 5:30 Eastern, watch the live shows and maybe don't have the luxury of having the time to go back and watch these shows from start to finish, I would recommend Ishii versus Omega from a couple nights ago in the B block matches. It was a match that the crowd getting into it at the very end, the drop, the near falls at the end, and then Ishii coming out a winner, which I don't know that anyone expected just because of the run Omega's been on and the how things usually go for Ishii. But that's a match that I've seen on my timeline on Twitter that people are absolutely raving about as one of the best matches they've ever seen. So if you have New Japan World, if you have access somehow to watching these matches, that is one that I would absolutely go back and watch from a few nights ago. That was just a fantastic match. And usually there are it's so tough to pick out some of the matches that I would recommend, because every night there seems to be at least one four-star match. And four-star matches have sort of become the norm these days, not only in New Japan, but with the number of independent wrestling promotions that are out there that are putting on great matches, as well as WWE. On some of their pay-per-view offerings. So that's sort of in the 6 or 7 days since I last had the opportunity to host this show, that would be the match that I would say would be going out of your way to see from the G1. But just a few more nights left there. As I said, the B block on Wednesday, August 8th, the lineup for that is Juice Robinson versus Ishii, Goto versus Sabre, Yano versus Omega, Bushi versus Tama Tonga, and Naito versus Sanada in the main event. Friday brings the A block. It's Tanahashi versus Okada, Makabe versus Elgin, Jay White against Evil, Yoshihashi against Adam Page, Bad Luck Fale against Minoru Suzuki. Saturday, August 11th, is the final B block. Juice Robinson against Goto, Ishii versus Sanada, Yano versus Tonga, Omega versus Ibushi, Naito versus Sabre, and then August 12th. Are the finals, and there's usually some very strong undercard matches on that event as well. We're going to be back with your phone calls. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you'd like to talk the big events in pro wrestling, we'll come back and we'll talk to Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, and then we'll talk Raw and SmackDown. Some interesting happenings from Raw this past week that I'll talk to Frank about when we come back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
Greg Parks and Frank Pediani back with Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. We'll go to our first phone call of the evening. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome back to the show.
Hello. first question for you is on Impact Wrestling. There have been a lot of rumblings of OB possibly doing the tag team titles for the ladies again like they did back in the 1980s. Could you see Impact Wrestling doing the same thing since they had a women's tag team match they opened the show and also that they have a history with this title?
You know, I don't think right now would be the time to do it simply because I don't think they have strong enough knockouts roster. I think they're building to that. You know, they've got Tessa Blanchard, they've got Ali Strong, Rosemary when she comes back from injury, Kira Hogan. So they're building that division again. I don't think at this time it's strong enough to support a knockouts tag team title. Frank, what's your take on that?
Yeah, Greg, I'm in alignment with you on this. There's not enough people. There's just not enough women in the knockouts division to justify that. That's not to say that they can't get to that point, you know, and you could certainly do that. I don't know where Impact is financially. I know they're, you know, on the rebound at this point, but, you know, I certainly, yeah, that would certainly be something that would come a little bit further down the line, I would think.
Ryan, back to you for a second question.
The second question is, I went to a wrestling show last night and got a Jason Raddick shirt, who does sort of like a Friday the 13th gimmick, and it was $10, which is a lot cheaper than a lot of the wrestling t-shirts. So which wrestling t-shirts have you gotten for $10 or under that you think are pretty cool?
I can't speak to the $10 or under, unfortunately. I've had very few wrestling shirts in my time. I had just a WWE logo t-shirt at one time in my younger days. It was the Attitude Era. It was, I think they were WWE at the time, so it was just the W. It wasn't the W and the F logo. And then I have, and I still wear this, I wore it last year on the first day of school, first day for teachers. The students weren't in yet, but it was the first day of school for teachers. I wore the old Miz Hello, I'm Awesome t-shirt. That was a gift that was given to me, and that's still in my rotation. I love that t-shirt. So it was not, I guess it was free for me because it's a gift. It wasn't priced under $10, but that's a wrestling shirt that I know I wear. Frank, any wrestling shirts in your time as a fan?
So if a gift counts as under $10, yes, I have. And I'll tell you, the most favorite wrestling shirt that I bought was following WrestleMania 4. My aunt and uncle were over. We watched it, and that's when Macho Man won the WWF title. And my uncle and I were huge, and we're still, to this day, God rest his soul, huge Macho Man fans. I think either that night or the next day, we put in an order for that shirt, and we got it. Was like the purple shirt, and it said Macho Man, and it had his glasses on it. And boy, I really wish I still had that thing. So if that counts as under $10, because I didn't pay anything for it, there you go. We actually, you know, it's funny that Ryan mentions that, because sometimes they will run sales during Raw. You know, if you're not watching on delay and you catch the commercials, you know, you'll have to buy one, get one. So, you know, if you buy one shirt for $30 or $20 or whatever, and you get the second one, I guess that counts. And
Hello?
One night we put in. Yeah, you there? Hello? Hello? We got a Becky Lynch shirt and a Finn Balor shirt and all kinds of shirts that night. So I guess that's my experience with shirts under $10.
It's interesting you said Macho Man Randy Savage, because FYE sells like a box set for Macho Man, where you get two DVDs, a shirt, a bandana, and a pair of sunglasses, and I paid for like $11, I think, for all that. But I had like a discount coupon and a membership card to get that.
What did you say that was, Ryan? Was that FYE, you said?
Yes, the place that sells like the DVDs and CDs and T-shirts in the malls.
Okay. Might have to check that out.
But normally it's in the back of the store.
And Ryan, do you have a third question?
Yeah, my third question is about Ring of Honor. You hear many people falling asleep during the show because it's at like 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, were sort of tired during the day because they didn't really have a great product, but I could see, like, a lot of people just snoozing, like me, like, you know, like you're waiting for this hurricane, villain match, but, you know, you're just not able to stay up till 1:30 to see it.
Frank, you want to take that one?
Well, 2 weeks ago I stayed up till 12:30 after throwing my daughter a birthday party to watch a 3.5-hour, what was it, Extreme Rules? So, I guess that's more my endurance for wrestling. But as far as Ring of Honor goes, I don't get Ring of Honor up here. But it's funny that you bring it up because at one point we did. It was on Destination America. I don't know if it was the same time. I thought Impact at one point was on Destination America as well.
Yep.
And and I don't know if it was at the same time. But I did try to watch Ring of Honor once, and I don't know if I just caught a bad show, but it just didn't hook me at the time, you know. But, you know, this was about 4 or 5 years ago. I know there's been some, you know, some changes, a working relationship with New Japan. So if Ring of Honor does, in fact, get a TV deal up here, depending on my wrestling budget, which is pretty strapped right now with WWE and Impact, you know, and a little bit of New Japan here and there, you know, I'd be interested to see it, you know, because I'd like to see a little more of Cody and the Young Bucks and, you know, guys like that, Dalton Castle. I'm interested in those guys for sure.
Yeah, when I lived in New York, Ring of Honor was on there locally and through the Sinclair stations. And I always, whether or not I stayed up to watch it, I DVR it, things like that. And that's something, even when I go up home now to New York and visit my parents, they get it overnight. And I'll make sure to DVR it, you know, because I don't get it down here in Florida. So certainly if it were available to me in a traditional television means, I wouldn't have any qualms about watching it no matter when it airs, I guess.
Are they airing, let me ask you something, Greg. Are they airing their weekly program on Honor Club? Are they airing it, or is that just the pay-per-view events, you know, like WWE Network?
I think they air their house shows on the Honor Club through the Honor Club as well. I'm not sure about TV tapings. I know you used to be able to watch TV through their website. They would have, and I'm pretty sure about this, they would have the latest TV available for free, but they would also have archives of previous weeks that you would have to be a member of the, I don't know if it was the Honor Club at the time, but you would have to be a member of the, you know, you have to pay whatever the fee was to watch the archives of the TV shows there through their website.
Okay. I think I've also seen it on Fight TV as well. I'm not 100% on that, but I think they might have something there too for that, so.
Oh, Ryan, appreciate the call. Thanks for calling in, and I hope to hear from you again soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. That is Ryan.
Good night, Ryan.
On Wrestling Night in America, pwtorchlivecast.com. If you would like to call in and talk to Frank Pediani and I, the number is 515-605-9345. Before we take another break, we're going to move over to Raw, Frank. Raw this week takes place from Jacksonville, Florida, the Jacksonville Veterans Memorial Arena. On tap, Ronda Rousey versus Alicia Fox, Bobby Roode versus Mojo Rawley, and they are hyping Roman Reigns' response to Brock Lesnar's treatment of Paul Heyman this past week. And that was one of the more interesting things coming out of Raw this past week, not just the appearance of Brock Lesnar, but Brock Lesnar's treatment of Paul Heyman and what that means going forward for the Lesnar-Reigns storyline. Frank, how did you see that? First of all, were you surprised that they went that direction with the Lesnar-Heyman relationship? And secondly, what, if anything, does that mean going forward for the Lesnar character as it pertains to his match with Reigns?
Wow. What do you say after last week? I mean, there's just a ton to drink in and a ton to think about as far as where we're going with the whole Lesnar-Reigns-Heyman storyline. As far as, I'll take that bit by bit. As far as Heyman-Lesnar, one thing that I don't see, and I want to throw this back to you, I don't see a Heyman turn and alignment with Reigns. Because that would mean to me that you're trying to get sympathy on Brock Lesnar, and I don't know that you could do that, and I don't know that you even want to do that. You know, you want Brock Lesnar to look like an evil monster, you know, which is the way he came across after last week, after attacking Heyman. Which, by the way, just to divert for 1 second, my wife actually pointed out that she really liked Lesnar last week. She liked that he spoke. She liked that he came across. And she thought he was really effective. She really did. And I know you and Wade discussed that on the flagship about Brock speaking. I don't mind Brock speaking. I like when he talks because he comes across well. And I thought he got his point across really well, especially, you know, telling Heyman, hey, you know, you work for me and go get me a steak and, you know, all of that stuff. But getting back to what I was saying, I don't see that. I don't see an alignment with Reigns. I don't think it would work as well as I thought it would. I always advocated for that, but the more I thought about it, I think it would actually hinder Reigns in the long run. Reigns comes across a lot better than we think. The problem with Reigns is not how he speaks, it's the lines he's given. It's the whole, I'm the uncrowned champion. You know, I had the worst tag team partner in Bob, calling Bobby Lashley Bob, you know, all that kind of stuff. Those are the lines that don't work for Reigns. When he just speaks naturally, you know, and says, you know, well, Brock Lesnar, I don't respect that fool, you know, all that kind of stuff, he comes across really well. I think if you align him with Heyman, I think that actually hinders him and they get in each other's way. Kind of like Heyman and CM Punk a few years ago. I actually couldn't stand that. When they put Heyman with Punk, I thought it actually diminished Punk a little bit. So I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that. And also with Reigns, you know, I still kind of see the Shield a little bit. Those guys always work better on their own. If you remember, when they aligned Reigns, when they aligned the Shield with the Authority back in 2013, after going on that run, beating everybody, you know, Hounds of Justice, all of that stuff, when they aligned with the Authority, I felt like the Shield was nothing. So I feel like if you put Heyman and Reigns together, I think it would actually drive Reigns down, as crazy as that sounds. Above all of that, I don't know if 52-year-old Paul Heyman wants to do it. If he does want to do anything, I see more of an alignment with Ronda Rousey if they decide to turn Ronda Rousey heel down the line.
My first reaction to Lesnar and Heyman was, oh my gosh, Heyman's going to cost Lesnar the match at SummerSlam. That was my very first reaction. Now, the more I sat and thought about it, the less that likely that seemed, especially when you're trying to make Lesnar such a strong heel, and that would kind of babyface him a little bit to have Heyman cheat to get the title off of him, and it certainly would make Reigns come across heelish, where when he finally does win the big one, it's via cheating. So I don't think that would work for a number of reasons. The more I've thought about it, the more I'm in the camp of this was done to continue the attempt by WWE to make Brock Lesnar a heel at all costs. And part of that is mistreating someone who's been very loyal to him. Even though Paul Heyman is a heel, Lesnar is mistreating someone who's been very loyal to him, someone who is weaker than him, and that makes Lesnar come across even more of a heel. Yeah, put sympathy on Heyman, but that's not really the main purpose of this, I don't think. It's to get people to boo Brock Lesnar. And I think this was just the next step. First it was, you know, he's not defending the title. He doesn't care about the WWE Universe. All he's interested now is UFC. And this is just another step taken by WWE to ensure that the fans boo Lesnar. And, you know, maybe if they convert some of them to cheer Reigns, great. But that's kind of how I see it. It's more about Lesnar than it is about Heyman or about Reigns at this point. We're going to take another break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about Monday Night Raw, specifically Bayley and Sasha Banks, as well as the Authors of Pain, as we head down the road to SummerSlam. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. Hold on.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week. With the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now, get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com. Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks here with you, along with PWTorch.com contributor Frank Pettiani. And as Frank noted before the break, I was on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship edition for Thursday on Podcast 1. That was always a good time talking with the head show here on the Torch, and you can download that just about anywhere where you can download podcasts and find my appearance on that show. With Wade Keller. Frank, I want to move now to talk about the tag team division on Monday Night Raw, specifically the Authors of Pain. We thought that they were having a short mini feud with Titus Worldwide after dispatching with them for a few weeks. It came back this Monday night, and they did more with Titus Worldwide, which is kind of interesting to me because it looks like the leaders of Worlds are still in the tag title situation with the B team. Now you've involved the Revival as well. So the Revival seems to have jumped the Authors of Pain on the Raw Tag Team Division hierarchy. What do you make of the Authors of Pain kind of slumming it here with Titus Worldwide when, really, based on where the Authors should be, you would think, and where Titus Worldwide is slotted, the Authors should have spent a week or two running through them and then moving up the card, and here they are in a multi-week feud with them. Do you think it's good to start them out at that lower level and kind of work their way up, or are they two you think should have been put right in the title picture upon their debut?
Looking at the Raw Tag Team division, I mean, you could make the case that the Authors of Pain could have won the titles on their first night. That division is so weak. With that being said, I'm not high on the I'm not that high on Authors of Pain right now, mostly because they don't have a mouthpiece. I think they desperately need somebody to speak for them. Considering the promo they cut this week or last week, where they talk about last chapter and last read or whatever it was, I think they desperately need somebody to talk to them. And I personally don't have a problem with the Revival jumping them, jumping ahead of them in the tag team division. They obviously had to think something of them to put them in a match with Lashley and Reigns a couple of weeks in a row and get victories. I know they were kind of start and stop when they came up, mostly because of injuries, and they finally been back the last couple of months. So I think that they could be, a different tag team. The problem with that is that when you watch the match with them and the Deleters of Worlds, you got CM Punk chance and you got Rusev Day chance. So while Frank Pettiani might think it's a good idea that the Revival is getting this push, the fans might necessarily not agree with it. I made a little bit of Akam getting the loss last week to Apollo. I tweeted it out that, oh my God, here we go with the destruction of the Authors of Pain. It might not be as big of a deal as we think. I mean, if they come back and they get a decisive victory, or if, Razor, let's say, goes over Titus and then they do something at SummerSlam, you get Authors of Pain pretty much right back on track. I suspect, based on last week, I think we're headed for the Revival possibly being the ones to defeat the B team. Mike, were you at the pre-show of SummerSlam?
Another match that was announced by Kurt Angle today for this week on Raw will be a rematch from last week, where Bayley and Sasha Banks take on the Riot Squad. So that will be happening, and the Revival take on the B team tomorrow night. I believe that's a non-title match. But I want to ask you about Bayley and Sasha Banks and what they've done together. They have now been back together for a few weeks. Do you see this as a long-term direction for them, or is this just the latest chapter in their eventual breakup?
So there's a couple of possibilities I thought about, Greg. With the announcement of Evolution, you have a couple of ways you can go. And it's funny you ask this, because I was reading an article today in the run-up to the show on Bleacher Report about the differences between storylines now and storylines, you know, say 20, 30 years ago, where you could kind of drag things out a few months. You didn't have everybody on the show every week, you know, and you were able to, you know, kind of spread out a storyline a little more efficiently and effectively. Now you're exposed on a week-to-week basis. So I think that's where some of the frustration has come in with the Bayley-Sasha storyline. That being said, with Evolution coming up, it's possible that they continue to make nice, and then there's a breakup somewhere, whether it be at SummerSlam, whether it be at Raw, you know, in the weeks prior, and you have a Bayley versus Sasha match at Evolution. The other possibility, and it's funny, Ryan earlier brought up tag teams in Impact. I see that more likely in WWE, where if you do create a tag team championship, Bayley and Sasha would be the perfect candidates to be the first champion. The only issue with that is, you know, how many tag team champions do you have? You have one for Raw, you have one for SmackDown. If you have one for each, you need a lot more women, and you need, you know, you need to have at least, what, you know, six teams total to justify that. So those are the two possibilities. The more likely of the two, though, I would think a breakup, and I would think a Bayley-Sasha match at Evolution.
I'm totally on board with them winning the newly created women's tag team titles at Evolution. I know it hasn't been officially announced yet, but I believe from what I've seen, the titles are made. So they are going in that direction to have women's tag team titles. Evolution would seem to be the right place to do it, although you're also having the Mae Young Classic final at that show, so you may not want to have too many tournament finals held on that night. But just for all they've been through, I would much rather be interested in Sasha Banks and Bayley coming together, staying together, and winning those tag team titles. What a story that would be after their tumultuous last year together, as opposed to using this as just another chapter in their eventual breakup. Because by the time they break up, no one's going to care. Or no one's going to buy it, because they've seen the breakup so many times. It's just not going to have any impact, because it's the boy who cried wolf syndrome. You know, every time you think they're breaking up, they've gotten back together, or they've just drawn things out further. So at this point, to me, there's no payoff in the breakup. There's nothing to look forward to for that, other than for this story to be done. So I say keep them together. Make this a feel-good story. WWE wants to put smiles on people's faces, yet every time there's a friendship in WWE, what's the first thing we talk about? We book their breakup, because we know that's how WWE does things. So it would be nice to see a tag team, a partnership, a friendship stay together over the long term. I'd like to see that at this point with Bayley and Sasha Banks. If you'd asked me 2 months ago, I wouldn't have thought that. But based on where we are right now, I think that's the way to go, which of course means WWE is going to break them up, and they'll probably face each other, like you said, at Evolution. I want to move over to SmackDown now, Frank. This week on SmackDown, AJ Styles returns after, I don't know, I guess he was off for last week. But that's what they're advertising. New Day takes on the Bar in the finals of that mini tag team tournament, where the winners will face the Bludgeon Brothers for the SmackDown tag team titles at SummerSlam. Last week, Charlotte horned in on Becky Lynch's women's title opportunity. She beat Carmella in the main event, putting herself into the SmackDown Women's SmackDown Women's title match at SummerSlam. So it's now a three-way with Charlotte, Becky Lynch, and Carmella. We also have Samoa Joe's promo about AJ's family and the Daniel Bryan Miz segment. But I want to start with the women, Frank. Becky Lynch versus Carmella, I think, was an intriguing one-on-one match, and it gave fans of Becky Lynch the feeling that finally she was getting her due, and hey, she might actually win the title, because Carmella is such a, to many people, a paper champion. Lynch might actually get the victory at SummerSlam and get a title run. And then Charlotte comes back this week, and she's given the opportunity to face Carmella in the main event. She beats Carmella, puts herself in the main event of SummerSlam, or in the title match of SummerSlam, and you see the dejected look on Becky Lynch backstage when she realizes her road to the SmackDown Women's title has now gotten more difficult. Is WWE trying to make Charlotte heelish here, or are they just stacking the odds against Becky Lynch so that it's a better story when Becky does finally win the title?
I think Evolution, we go back to Evolution again, I think Evolution has a lot to do with this. As far as Charlotte going heel, I'm not strong in either way as to whether or not they're going to turn her heel or just keep her babyface. What I'm thinking more is that Charlotte actually wins the title, and you have Becky chase Charlotte in the run-up to Evolution and have a championship match between the two of them at Evolution, where Becky, you know, does win the title. It's possible also that Becky, like you said, maybe stacking the odds against her a little bit, creating a little bit of possible conflict between Becky and Charlotte, which we could see develop here in the next couple of weeks in the run-up to SummerSlam, and then Becky overcomes the odds, and wins the championship. And Greg, dear God, I could actually see Carmella retaining the championship at SummerSlam, just knowing how WWE thinks and what they've done in the past in situations like this. It's possible that they could give her a win in some kind of schmoz fashion. I don't know how. Certainly hope not with James Ellsworth coming back. I really hope that that's a done deal.
Yeah, I was about to say she's used up the Ellsworth card. I think they've done all they can with that. Once you take that out of the equation, what's left for her to retain? You know.
I agree. No, I mean, like I said, it's more likely that one of the other two wins, but, you know, wouldn't it be WWE to have her retain in some kind of screwy fashion? I don't know how. And then you have a rematch on SmackDown, you know, just to pop a rating or something like that. I mean, we are actually, ironically, we're going to that SmackDown in Brooklyn, and, you know, just to pop a rating or something like that, or knowing that people might be watching, you know, they could have some kind of a rematch, and then, you know, Becky wins the championship. But, like I said, it's intriguing. I actually like the inclusion of Charlotte. And it's funny, I thought about it. Becky having a one-on-one with Carmella a few weeks ago should have been a tell that the match wasn't going to stay one-on-one. I wasn't sure of Charlotte's, status at the time. I wasn't sure if she was coming back. I thought maybe she might be out till after SummerSlam. But that should have been a tell. Either way, I think it's going to be a good match, and hopefully either Charlotte or Becky wins the championship.
We're going to take a break and come back with more discussion of SmackDown, as well as this past week's NXT with an eye toward TakeOver Brooklyn. Don't go anywhere. We're back right after this on Wrestling Night in America.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. on Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly. Join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you'd like to talk to me and Frank Pediani about the big shows in pro wrestling, we're looking forward to SummerSlam, NXT TakeOver, and all things in between, I guess, as every Raw and SmackDown seems to have their own bigness, as well as Impact, and these weekly shows historically have been big shows in their own right, I guess, putting shows on to try and catch the ratings. So we talk about those here on Wrestling Night in America as well. So we continue our discussion, Frank, of SmackDown. And Wade asked me this question when I was on the flagship this past week about Samoa Joe's promo relating to AJ Styles' family and where that might be leading. What's your take on that? Because they've got the SummerSlam title match set. Is this storyline going to be about AJ and his family, or was this just a one-off promo where Joe's trying to get on AJ's skin, knowing he's not in the arena, and this week AJ will be there to respond to what he said?
Definitely more the latter. I told this, I was talking to my wife earlier. She was watching SmackDown. We actually just watched that promo today because she missed it. And I said, could we start a clinic on how to be a heel, and could Samoa Joe run it? Because he just knows how to come across. You know, no nonsense, no jokes, no smiling, none of that. That being said, as far as the family is concerned, I don't see that being much of a factor going forward. I think it's definitely more to get under AJ's skin, kind of draw that ire a little bit, maybe bring out a little darker side of AJ. I'm not saying he's going to turn heel or anything like that, but kind of to get him a little bit angry. I know they're not going to mention their history in TNA. I know they work together, over there. I'm sure over the title. I'd have to defer to you on that history. But, there's certainly a history between those two. And, like I said, I think it was just to get under his skin and just to see how he responds this week. It was very interesting, too, and I think Wade pointed this out, that, or maybe it was you, that, you know, Samoa Joe is doing this without AJ in the ring. And sometimes, you know, something like that is more effective. You know, when you don't have the face-to-face and you can just cut your promo, it helps in the way you come across. So definitely a solid promo, and we'll have to see where it goes. By the way, I do like that they announced AJ will be here next week. It makes the champion feel special. It's kind of an 80s touch early 90s touch. So I like the way that was handled overall.
They've done that a lot with Aleister Black on NXT when he was champion. They would advertise his appearances ahead of time. And you're right, it did make the champion feel more special because they're saying, hey, this guy is worth going out of our way to point out that he's going to be here. So it must be a big deal. And I want to go back to your point on that promo by Joe, because I think you're right that sometimes the writers like to get cute when there's a back and forth between two guys in the ring, and sometimes the message gets lost in translation when you have guys going back and forth. It was more powerful to have Samoa Joe there in the ring cutting his promo uninterrupted with, you know, the attention of the fans all on him, and he could do his thing, and I think that's absolutely true, that it would not have been as powerful if somebody had interrupted, or if AJ was in the ring, or if, you know, Renee Young was asking him questions or things like that. So it was very strong the way it was done. Daniel Bryan and The Miz, they had a pretty good segment until the crying baby babies took over the video wall during Miz's promo. Daniel Bryan, in essence, challenged The Miz to a match at SummerSlam. Miz turned him down. I don't think they would plant that seed in the mind of the viewer if they weren't going to pay that off. So we can pencil in, don't write it in pen yet, but I think we can pencil in Daniel Bryan and The Miz at SummerSlam. Frank, what did you think of that segment this past week on SmackDown? And this is kind of a weird thing to think, but with the SummerSlam card as it is right now, is it too top-heavy for a Daniel Bryan-Miz match to stand out the way it should? Because they've really been building this match, if you want to go back this far, they've been building this match since Daniel Bryan debuted as a rookie in NXT and The Miz was his was his mentor. This is a huge match to a lot of people. When you look at the SummerSlam card, this is kind of a mid-card match there. Would it be better to hold it off to where it would stand more on a card?
Well, I'm going to answer that. I just want to go back to one more thing with Joe and just further a point that you said. I wish they would do more solo promos like that because I think it's 100 times more effective when you don't have the back and forth. And save the back and forth for a special occasion. Save it for the final week if you want to do a face-to-face. I just wanted to add that point. As far as the Daniel Bryan Miz match, I don't think WWE is going to worry if a card is top-heavy. If they want to do a Daniel Bryan Miz match, they're going to do a Daniel Bryan Miz match. The other thing you have to look at is if Daniel Bryan is not signed, if he hasn't signed his contract and he leaves, I think it's going to be very unsatisfying if we don't do a Daniel Bryan Miz match. Even if you have The Miz go over and let's say Daniel Bryan leaves, he goes off on his merry way, maybe he comes back in a year, whatever. At least you did a match, you had The Miz go over, and you can have Daniel Bryan come back down the line and get a victory at a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam or what have you. So I don't think the rest of the card is going to factor into whether or not they decide to do that match.
Fair enough. There does seem to be a lot of buzz about Daniel Bryan re-signing, but until he puts ink to paper, you can't really bet on anything in the wrestling industry. Moving along
to... One thing I want
to
jump in.
Yeah, go ahead.
One thing I want to add, I think it's interesting that they actually mentioned it on TV. Historically, I think that whenever something like that gets mentioned, it's more likely that he is going to sign. I could be wrong on that because I know I remember back with the CM Punk. I'm bringing up CM Punk again. With the whole Summer of Punk, when they were talking about his contract, I don't think they would have talked about it unless he was definitely staying. I can't remember other instances off the top of my head, but that would kind of lead me to more Daniel Bryan staying. I don't know what you think about that, Greg.
Yeah, I think it's just WWE's attempt to add a little realism to the storyline, which, to be honest, is built on realism in a lot of ways with just their background and The Miz coming from reality TV to get a spot in WWE and Daniel Bryan working the independents, pounding the pavement to get a spot in WWE after years of work. So they come from very different backgrounds in real life, which is used to tell the story. And so peppering in a little more real life at this point in the storyline is not shocking, I guess I would say, to that point. So we'll have to see. If Daniel Bryan does re-sign, I'm sure that there will be a lot of opinions on both sides. And Frank, let me ask you. I mean, if you're in Daniel Bryan's shoes, do you re-sign with WWE or do you take your chances on the independents, seeing what the Young Bucks and Cody have established and the kind of money they're making their own schedule? And knowing that kind of freedom probably appeals to someone like Daniel Bryan versus, you know, being in WWE, a company that also employs his wife, Brie. He's on Total Bellas. It's a company that is making sure his health is in good order, and that's not something you could guarantee going out on the independent. What's your take on what you would do if you were Daniel Bryan?
So, having a child, you've got to make decisions based on that. That's especially with, his daughter being one. That's everything right now. I mean, if I were him, and maybe this is just me being a dad myself speaking, I would probably take the safer course and stay with WWE. That being said, it might be something that he really wants to do. And, the opportunity might not be there, let's say, in 2-3 years. Let's just say he signs a 3-year contract. He signs a 3-year contract. I think he's 38 at that point. Does he want to go out at 38 and try to, do what Cody has done, try to do what the Young Bucks have done? I'm not so sure. So if he is going to go out, and leave WWE, the time is now. I'm more inclined to believe that he's going to stay, to be quite honest with you.
Okay. Over to NXT this past week, we had Aleister Black attacking Johnny Gargano for Gargano costing Black the NXT championship against Tommaso Ciampa, who is the new champion. Shayna Baszler defeated Candice LeRae, and angry Kairi Sane makes the stares down Baszler in a way that we've not seen Sane do before. And we also had EC3 over Kona Reeves. Coming up this week on NXT TV, it's Keith Lee making his NXT debut. Ricochet is in action. Also announced for TakeOver past week on NXT television was Velveteen Dream versus EC3 and Ricochet versus Adam Cole for the North American title. Frank, looking at the situation with Gargano, Black, and Ciampa, I don't think it's been officially announced yet, although speculation is there will be a triple threat at TakeOver with Black, Ciampa, and Gargano. Gargano cost Black the NXT title. Black is a babyface, Gargano's a babyface. Are they tempting fate a little bit with the way they're booking Gargano here to come off as a little heelish, maybe a little obsessive of Tommaso Ciampa when Gargano has been the biggest babyface NXT has ever had?
It's funny you ask that. The first person I thought of when I saw this was Eddie Edwards. He's not going quite as crazy as Eddie Edwards did, in the story with Sammy Callahan, but it's certainly kind of along the same lines. It is risky when you do that, because now you have Gargano in a really weird place. Up until he cost Aleister Black the championship, he was clearly the favorite of NXT. And I would have thought that, let's just say for argument's sake, Daniel Bryan left, there's your call-up to replace Daniel Bryan, because that's basically what Johnny Gargano is. He's another Daniel Bryan, the underdog, small guy, has to fight for everything. Now, everything is in a strange place, because what do you do with Johnny? You have the fans chanting, let's go Johnny, and now you have Johnny sucks, and then you have you deserve it when Aleister gives him the black mask. So
yeah.
You're right. It really just puts Johnny in a weird place, because, well, what is he doing? Is he going to turn heel and realign with Ciampa? Are we going to have a double? I mean, I can't see a double turn with Ciampa and Gargano.
No.
So I don't know, And I actually kind of like that I don't know, in a sense, because I can't predict in which direction everybody's going. So I kind of like that. So honestly, and this is not to be dismissive of the question, it's something that we just have to wait and see how it plays out. We have to see the match announced, and then we have to see, what happens at TakeOver. What I would add to that, Greg, is a lot of that is dependent on who's getting called up. I know you and Joel last week discussed, Aleister maybe coming up and Johnny coming up. prior to this NXT, I was actually convinced that Johnny was coming up. After this week, I got to be honest with you, I have no idea. I really don't.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the not knowing of the booking of what's going to happen and how you kind of like that. And I agree. I like that as it pertains to this story with NXT because I have confidence in the NXT storytelling to pay it off. Now, on the main roster, you could say, you know, I genuinely don't know where this is going, but I'm also not confident of where the finish line is, you know. So it is.
Yep.
It does make you feel – those are two different feelings, you know. The feeling that, man, I don't know where this is going, but I'm excited because I think it'll be worth the wait to find out. Or, man, I don't know where this is going, and I just feel I'm going to get disappointed when I get there. And I think that's the two – that's the difference between main roster – and see how it plays out versus NXT, wait and see how it plays out.
And I think Cam, you know, I don't know if Candace is going to factor into this. You know, maybe she has a conversation with Johnny, I don't know, and he snaps out of it. You know, maybe he loses and he comes up to NXT. One thing I will add, I did watch 205 Live today. I like 205 Live ever since Triple H took over. Prior to Triple H taking over, I would not have wanted Johnny on that show. Since he's taken over, I think that show, one of the issues that it has, it lacks that home run hitter. It lacks that character that, man, I want to see this guy. Johnny would be that character, you know. If they get him back in the right direction, if they get him back in, you know, more of what he was doing prior to costing Black the championship, I think he would be a nice fit on 205 Live. Just because the storytelling is a lot better, you know, and then it depends on who you add. Maybe you drop a little Adam Cole in there next year, you know, I don't know. But it certainly could be a foundational piece if they want to go forward and improve that show.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're going to take a break and come back with putting a bow on the NXT discussion and then preview the SummerSlam lineup, and then we'll get into some Impact Wrestling talk right after this here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too, and if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Back here on Wrestling Night America on PW Torch Live. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you've got thoughts or questions on any of the big shows coming up in professional wrestling, Greg Parks and Frank Pettiani here with you, taking you through the week in wrestling TV. Frank, to end our NXT discussion for the week, it's kind of ironic that we're getting a Shayna Baszler-Kyrie Sane feud in NXT at the same time the Mae Young Classic is starting up again, because that was the finals of the Mae Young Classic last year. We saw a more serious side of Kairi Sane as she came to the aid of Candice LeRae after her match with Shayna Baszler this past week on NXT television. Do you think that was a necessary step in her character progression in order for fans to take her serious in her challenge of Shayna Baszler at TakeOver Brooklyn coming up?
I think so. I initially was high on Kairi Sane. I kind of moved away from her a little bit, most particularly because I don't get the Pirate Princess gimmick. I mean, it just kind of feels like something that they gave her, and here you go, you know, you're the Pirate Princess. Now, there could be more to that. I don't know. You know, I'd have to do a little more research on my own. That being said, I like that they showed a more serious side to her. I like that they showed a more edgier side to her. If they're going to make her a champion, you know, you want to have that edge to you. You want to have that believability that, okay, you know, I'll go out there and I'll smile and, you know, I'll do all of this stuff, but don't mess with me. You know what I'm saying? If you you know, you want to go out, you want to give the whatever, what's Shayna's finisher, the not the Kimura lock, what's her, what do you call her finisher, Greg? I'm sorry, it's escaping me at the moment.
You're putting me on the spot here. is it the arm, whatever she does with the arm, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly what it is. I couldn't think of the name, and I looked it up today, too, for the show, and I forgot. But, you know, you want to sit there and you want to give that to people at will. No, I'm not going to tolerate that. I'm going to come out there and I'm going to break it up. So I like that they gave her that spot. I'm not 100% sure that she's going to retain the title. I could win the title. I could see Shayna retaining and maybe continuing on to, you know, to take over in the Staples Center, you know, around Survivor Series time. I'm not sure who her challenger would be. Maybe another Kairi Sane match. I don't know. But it certainly could go either way. And I'll put it to you like this. I'm more convinced after this past week's taping that Kairi could win the title because she showed that serious side to her.
Is it the Karafuda clutch that you're thinking of? Is the choke out?
That's it. That's it. The camera. Yeah, that's it. That's what it was.
I cheated. I looked online, so it's not like it just came to me in a burst of genius or anything like that. I have to look that up. I'll say that.
It's funny. I got my iPad in front of me, and I could have done the same thing. I apologize, but I looked it up for tonight's show, and I didn't write it down, and it just escaped me. But anyway, like I said, it definitely. The run-in and the look on Kairi's face definitely drove me in a direction that she could win the title. Prior to the taping, I was more convinced Shayna would win, but now it could go either way.
We look ahead now to the actual SummerSlam lineup. SummerSlam is slated for August 19th. It's 2 weeks away. I want to remind our listeners that Wrestling America goes on the air at 8 p.m. Eastern every Sunday night on PWTorchLivecast.com, except nights that there are pay-per-views, WWE or Impact Wrestling. In the case of those evenings, we'll go on the air right after the show ends. So as soon as SummerSlam goes off the air on the WWE Network, give or take 5 minutes, we'll be going on the air with Wrestling Night in America with all the post-show reaction from you, our callers, at 515-605-9345, and discussion of the show from all angles. So just a reminder for SummerSlam coming up. The lineup as it stands right now: Brock Lesnar against Roman Reigns for the Universal title, Alexa Bliss versus Ronda Rousey for the Raw Women's title, AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE title, the Bludgeon Brothers versus either New Day or The Bar for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship, Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens in a match where if Braun loses, he loses the Money in the Bank briefcase to Kevin Owens. Ziggler defends his Intercontinental title against Seth Rollins. Carmella against Becky Lynch and Charlotte in a triple threat for the SmackDown Women's title. Cedric Alexander against Drew Gulak for the Cruiserweight Championship. And Shinsuke Nakamura versus Jeff Hardy for the U.S. title. We haven't talked at all about a couple of these matches that I do want to hit on. One is Nakamura versus Hardy. Are you surprised that Randy Orton isn't a part of that? Do you think he's going to be added to that to make it a triple threat? And are you surprised Jeff Hardy's still in it? Because I think there was some speculation that the Orton pack, pick whichever one, was going to be his write-off for a while to kind of get healed up since he's pretty banged up. He's not doing the Swanton at house shows, things like that. So are you surprised Jeff Hardy's back in a pay-per-view match this quickly, and do you expect Randy Orton to get added to this match?
It's funny you bring that up. I'm wondering if Orton still can't go, but they wanted to bring him back on TV just to set something up, you know, after SummerSlam. We've seen that before where injured wrestlers come back, most notably Stone Cold in 1997, when they brought him back and he didn't take any bumps. He just, you know, beat everybody down. So I wonder if that's what's going on, because if Orton was going to be in the match, why wouldn't they have just announced it straight out from the gate? You know, I know it was announced the other day on Twitter, so I'm not so sure about that. I think with Jeff, I think it's the opportunity to give Shinsuke an easy win until they move on and get another babyface challenger, whoever that might be. I don't know, because you literally have no babyfaces on SmackDown unless you officially make Rusev, which would be my next choice. But other than that, you're looking at R-Truth and Ty Dillinger. So, yeah, I think it's really just to get Shinsuke an easy win. And then we'll just have to figure out where Randy Orton fits into the picture going down the line.
The other match I want to give some discussion to is Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens. We've seen that WWE, with the Braun Strowman character, likes to think outside the box when it comes to matches, when it comes to finishes. What's your expectation here? I would expect Braun Strowman to win and retain the briefcase, but do it in a gimmicky way. I can't even imagine what WWE has planned for this, but I'm sure it's going to be a doozy, and I'm sure it's one we're going to be talking about, for better or worse, after this show. What are your expectations for, if any, for the finish of that match?
I'm going to make the bold prediction, Greg, and I'll owe you a beer if I'm wrong. I'm going to say Kevin Owens is going to win this. And I say that because I think by taking the briefcase off of Strowman, then it's a clear path for Reigns to win the title and walk out of SummerSlam with the confetti and the balloons coming down with the Universal Championship. So I'm going to make that prediction. I'm sure he'll win it in some kind of weaselly fashion. You know, whatever he does, I don't know. But I think that's what they're going to do. And then, you know, they'll park him on the side and figure out, you know, when to do the cash-in. But by having Braun keep the briefcase, then all eyes during the Reigns-Lesnar match are going to be on the Titantron, just waiting for Braun to come out as soon as that match is over. So that would be why I would switch it to Owens.
We had Braun losing at Extreme Rules. We had him lose last week on Raw by countout, and you're also predicting a somewhat gimmicky loss, I guess, to Kevin Owens at SummerSlam. Is that too much for the Strowman character to lose that many times, or is it the fact that he's not losing in a definitive way, and it's more of a he's losing in cheap ways, like throwing Kevin Owens off the cage and losing by countout? Does it almost not matter that he's losing those matches?
I think it honestly doesn't matter. I mean, I totally forgot about the results of Extreme Rules, that Braun lost that match. All I could think about was Braun throwing Kevin off the Hell in a Cell, which, by the way, I really don't need to see anymore at this point in 2018. So definitely that. You know, all he's got to do is tip over another car or a porta potty or something, and, you know, that'll erase the loss if that's the way they go with SummerSlam, Greg, to be perfectly honest with you.
and that tends to be the way they book Braun Strowman. So he's sort of in this position where he's immune to wins and losses because he can just do his next feat of strength and, you know, get all of his credibility back. So kind of we're in the position of Braun Strowman right now. We have one more break to take, and then we're going to be back with a discussion of Impact Wrestling in its post-Slammiversary 2 weeks of television. So we're going to discuss that right after this on WTorchLivecast.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Greg Parks and Frank Petty, I'm back with you on the Wrestling Night in America livecast for Sunday, August 5th, 2018. And in our final segment, we'll talk about Impact Wrestling. This past week on Impact, Allie and Kira Hogan defeated Sue Young and one of her undead brides in a match where Tessa Blanchard attacked Allie after the match. We had the OGs winning a squash. LAX attacked after the match. Conan sort of talked LAX down after that attack. The Desi Hit Squad defeated KM and Falaba. Austin Aries defeated one of Santino Marella, a.k.a. Anthony Corelli's trainees, Dustin Cameron. And Eddie Edwards attacked Austin Aries after that match. We had another segment with Scarlett Bordeaux. We had Eli Drake and Trevor Lee over Grado and Joe Hendry, and the Lucha Brothers over OVE and Sammy Callahan in the main event. The show ended with Killer Cross having taken out Anthony Corelli and dropping the red X on a prone Corelli. This week on Impact, Alicia Edwards takes on Tessa Blanchard. Eddie Edwards faces Austin Aries for the Impact title. The Desi Hit Squad takes on Ishimori and Petey Williams, and Matt Sydal against Pentagon Jr. So, Frank, first I want to ask you about Eddie Edwards, because you mentioned him earlier on the show comparing it to Johnny Gargano. Eddie Edwards was this crazed heel attacking Tommy Dreamer, having a feud with him, having a disagreement with his wife. His wife has seemingly moved on from Eddie Edwards at this point. And now we're seeing that turn back to babyface with Eddie Edwards, where he's attacked Austin Aries, now getting a shot at the title. Has this babyface turn taken for you? I mean, are you buying it after the brutal match with Tommy Dreamer at Slammiversary, where there was almost, I don't want to say a light went on with Eddie Edwards after that match, but was there sort of a cleansing of the soul of Eddie Edwards after that match, where now he's crazed, but he's good guy crazed instead of bad guy crazed? I mean, what do you make of this presentation of Eddie Edwards as a babyface the last few weeks on Impact?
Well, if you want to create a category of crazed babyface, then yeah, there's Eddie Edwards for you right there, Greg. I mean, the babyface turn hasn't taken for me. If he really wanted to turn babyface, he would be a little more remorseful to his wife. I mean, I know he apologized, you know, and he said, you know, what he said in that interview in the back after the attack on Austin. But, you know, attacking a attacking anybody from behind is not a babyface tactic. So I'm not buying it. I'm buying that he's not, you know, crazed anymore the way he was with Sammy Callahan and Tommy Dreamer. It's just kind of this guy in this weird place. A caller on the post-Slammiversary show brought up something, and I want to revisit that discussion about champions being, you know, generally heel. Is that a trend generally with Impact? Because, I didn't really start watching full-time until this year. But, you know, is it something that, you know, maybe Eddie could win the title from Austin Aries and then kind of go back into the heel direction? Is that something that maybe you could see?
Heels have been champion quite a bit in Impact. I think that's a pretty accurate statement, maybe percentage-wise more so than in other companies, just, you know, thinking off the top of my head. I think having Edwards win the title and then turning heel erases a lot of what you build up in that babyface turn. And, you know, if you wanted to have him become a champion as a heel, then have Aries drop the title to a babyface. Have him, you know, he would have dropped it to Moose at Slammiversary.
Right.
And then have Edwards continue as a heel, and then have Edwards and Moose feud, and have Edwards win the title from Moose. I think that's a lot less of a sticky storytelling than, okay, Edwards is a heel, now he's a babyface, he's run up to the title, now he wins the title, and he's heel again. I think that's a little more complicated for complication's sake. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but so far what we've seen from the Don Callis, Scott D'Amore, Sanjay Dutt administration is a lot less of that, those type turns that, unfortunately, in past management with Impact and with TNA, became the norm seeing turns like that often.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's just something that the guy that I thought was actually turning babyface a while ago was Eli Drake, and I kind of find him to be in an even weirder place because now just kind of doing this thing with Grado and Hendry, I thought maybe he was going in that direction, especially in the feud with Scott Steiner, but I guess, and especially, you know, to him signing the contract, so I thought that would be the guy, but yeah. Again,
yeah, Drake had his time, you know, he had his time as champion, and it wasn't inspiring from a creative standpoint. Not that for Aries as champion, it hasn't moved the needle really for Impact. Ratings are actually down from where they were a couple months ago and year to year. So despite the positive buzz that Impact is getting, they're not seeing that in the ratings right now. And we know that it takes time for that sort of thing to grab hold. It's not an overnight thing. We saw, you know, one of the stories coming out of the Monday Night War was WWE was putting on much better shows than WCW months before they really overtook WCW in the ratings. So that kind of thing, the quality of show vis-a-vis ratings, it does not always match up. And you know, we'll have to see maybe 3 months down the line where that positive buzz from Slammiversary and from TV has gotten Impact rating-wise, if anywhere at all. Austin Aries and the trainee of Anthony Carelli, this started the previous week on Impact when Aries basically said there were no challenges left for him, and it had been established that Carelli and some of his trainees were at Impact in Toronto, and one of his trainees came up and challenged Austin Aries, much to the chagrin of Anthony Carelli. And we saw the match this week, which Aries took lightly, as he no doubt should. Carelli ended up throwing in the towel to end the match. So what's your thought on that multi-week storyline? I thought it was really well done. I thought it killed some time. 2 weeks of TV for Austin Aries without having to put him right in their title situation immediately, although they kind of did with Eddie Edwards, but that was sort of the periphery. And, you know, I thought it was very unique the way it was done. I thought it was handled really well. It didn't make Austin Aries look bad for selling for the trainee, but, you know, the trainee came across sympathetic, so I think it worked on a lot of levels. What did you think?
The only issue I had with it, Greg, was if Carelli can't wrestle, what's the point of attacking him? And I asked the same question with Killer Kross throwing the cross on him. I mean, if he can't go, I don't know what the point is. Unless somebody's going to come out and save Anthony, you know, I don't know. I don't know who that would be. But, you know, they come out, they save him, and then that's your next challenger for Austin Aries, assuming that he holds on to the title from, you know, Eddie Edwards. One thing I will say, I did like Anthony Carelli speaking in his natural accent, and it really made me not miss Santino Marella, to be quite honest with you. I mean, not that I hated Santino, but just hearing him speak in his normal accent was really refreshing. So that part I did like about it, I'll tell you that.
It was weird hearing him, because I've not heard a lot of the interviews that he's done after his wrestling career has ended, and I know he's doing a training up there at the dojo, but it's like you see the voice and the mouth moving, but you can't match up with that face because you're so used to the Santino Marella accent that it's just very jarring, and it took me a couple segments of watching Anthony Carelli speak to actually get used to it. The other question about Impact, one of the other questions I have is about Scarlett Bordeaux. She has debuted as the Smoke Show, where she's making wrestling hot again. And we've seen WWE, aside from attempts with Emelina and things like that, really get away from not exploiting that part of the women, but they've focused more on the athleticism, more on the in-ring talent of the women, and they've gotten far away from what we saw with Scarlett Bordeaux on Impact. And You know, if you want to give the Knockouts credit, they were really the first, even before WWE had moved away from the Deep moniker, Knockouts were really the first to embrace the in-ring aspect of the women. Yet, here's Scarlett Bordeaux, and I think there's a place for this in wrestling. But what's your take on this character coming on the heels of WWE's Women's Evolution and them trying to distance themselves from gimmicks like this? And really, Impact doesn't have a lot of gimmicks like this, so it does stand out in that atmosphere as well.
Before I answer that question, was it me or did she take a little shot at WWE in her debut? Because if I recall, I think she said, I want to be part of an evolution. I think she used that word revolution, you know, the word that has certainly been touted by WWE. And she used a lot of WWE speak in her first promo. So I thought that was a little shot across the bow by Impact. That being said, she has certainly, she's a sight, all right. She's definitely made her presence known in the first couple of weeks. They're really, as a man, yeah, I don't mind seeing that.
Your wife's
on the other hand,
is she drink?
No, she is. I'm going to get in trouble for that.
You seem
that's,
to be tiptoeing
yeah.
a little bit. I just wanted to check.
No, she is. I'm just being honest. on the other hand, considering the progress that has been made in women's wrestling, I don't think it's necessary to have that. A lot is going to depend on when she does get in the ring, what she does, what kind of matches she has, you know, what her trajectory is in that aspect. And, you know, if she can't get it done and she can't talk, it's just not going to matter. So it's certainly an impactful character. But, again, we have to see how it plays out before we judge it.
And finally, the OGs against LAX. OGs win a squash. LAX comes out and attacks after the match. Conan has to talk LAX down. They're not happy. Conan says, hey, this was a, you know, we were set up by King and the OGs. Where do you see this ending up? You know, we've had the 51-50 street fight at Slammiversary. This feud is obviously continuing. It has the feel of a very long-term feud. There was a long build to it, a lot of story there with King taking over when Conan disappeared, Conan accusing King of taking him out and trying to take over LAX. You know, what's been your take on the feud so far? I think it's been strong. I liked it. And, you know, where do you think it ends up leading to?
Greg, this is my favorite feud in Impact. I can watch this feud over and over again. I think it has been so well done. And, my God, this has been the best I've ever seen Conan. I mean, I like him a million times better than what he was, you know, when he was in the NWO Wolfpack years ago. That being said, I think it depends on, you know, where Impact is with Hernandez and Homicide. You know, I don't know what their contract situation is. You know, I could see this go on for a while. I could definitely see this going on in at Bound for Glory. You know, I could see another match and beyond. Again, it depends on the contractual situation. You could see a title switch, and you could see the titles go back to LAX. So it's certainly got some potential. I mean, I think in the end, you know, the current LAX is going to prevail, but there's going to be a lot of twists and turns along the way. I guarantee that.
I think what's really struck me about this and what really can what they can do now with feud is we see Conan evolve physically at the MLW show, the Battle Riot, wherein he was actually a participant. And for the longest time, he hasn't done anything physical because of his hips and having surgery and things of that nature. So he's kind of been an untouchable for a while. Now that he's able to get physical, I think it does add another element to this feud and add something else that they can do. You know, King was never off limits. He could be physical. So, you know, maybe the next step is a six-man tag match where all six guys are involved and something like that. So I definitely see this going to Bound for Glory. Could do a blow-off there, but it's certainly got the legs, I think, especially with Conan appearing to be able to get involved in the storyline again.
Yeah, and King, Eddie Kingston is a great character as well. I like the way he comes across. I like the way he promotes the OGs. I know Mike McMahon was pretty high on him coming back. And isn't Diamante involved with them as well? She's kind of been out of the picture the last couple of weeks. I don't know where she factored.
Yeah, I think she got hurt again. Think she's on the shelf. And so it's unfortunate because I think she did add something to that group. So we'll have to see when she gets back where she fits in.
Absolutely. And the team I like also getting involved, that main event was just great between Pentagon and Phoenix versus OVE. You know, you could certainly weave them, into some kind of rivalry with the OGs and LAX, dare I say a triple threat match, but they could certainly get involved too. You got a lot of potential with the Impact Tag Team division right now. I like what I see.
Yeah, very positive vibes coming out of Impact Wrestling right now, which is, as you said, very good to see. That's 9 minutes, Frank. And appreciate you coming on the show to co-host after many weeks of calling in. It's good to hear your opinions for the full 90 minutes. And tell you what, if Braun Strowman manages to hold off Kevin Owens at SummerSlam, the next time you're laid over in Fort Myers, I'll hit you up for that beer.
Absolutely. It'll be my pleasure. And if Kevin Owens wins, I'll still get you a beer. How about that?
That's the kind of bet I can really get behind, Frank.
There you go, Greg. There you go. It's been this has been great doing this with you. I look forward to doing this again and look forward to what's coming up with the big events.
Absolutely. And you can check out Frank's Raw and SmackDown primers every Monday and Tuesday on PWTorch.com, PWTorch.com contributor Frank Pettiani joining us here tonight. And thanks to you, the listeners. That'll do it for this week on Wrestling Night in America. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. We'll be back with you 8 p.m. Eastern next week. And if you are not a VIP member of PWTorch.com, I wholeheartedly encourage you to go VIP. And here's how you can do it.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.
Like me.